prior to April of this year, few people in the blind community knew the name Dick Chandler. For those interested in assistive technology, Dick Chandler's name is now a household one. He's the president of Freedom Scientific, the company that now incorporates the product lines of Blazy Engineering, Arkenstone, and Henterjoyce, some of the most used products in our industry. There's natural anxiety and concern about the future of those products, and curiosity about where developments are going to take us. Here's a recording of an extended interview with Dick Chandler I conducted a few days ago. Welcome to the program, Dick. And first of all, a cursory glance at management issues in the US over the last few years or so indicates that you have quite a reputation as a professional manager. I wonder if you could just give us a brief rundown for those in the blind community who haven't met you before about your career to date.
Okay, well, I am a professional manager, and then I've been doing it for, I think, 33 years now. I have an MBA, and my early career was with major global corporations, Bell & Howell Company and Sara Lee Corporation. Then I found myself running a division of Sara Lee called Abbey Medical, which had 100 stores coast-to-coast renting and selling wheelchairs and other disability products. That was back in 77. And I ended up buying that from Sara Lee in a management buyout with a group of investors, and turned it into an independent company. We were in the process of going public, and we ended up selling out to a company called American Hospital Supply, which became Baxter International. So I stayed on there for a short while, but basically wanted to do something on my own, and I thought there was a great opportunity there in pulling together a group of manufacturers who had been suppliers to Abbey Medical, and pull them together under one marketing umbrella and leverage sort of the critical mass that you get from multiple product lines selling into the home healthcare and rehabilitation products distribution channel and to end users. So I raised some venture capital money. This was in 83 now, and bought five companies within the first 3 months, and then went public in the fall of 83 and called it Sunrise Medical. And we had a wheelchair company and a hospital bed company, a company that made crutches and walkers and patient lifters. So it was a broad product line, but all disability related, and really for people with physical disabilities. So we went public in the fall of 83, and I ran that for 16 years and made about 60 acquisitions during that time frame, and built up to about just under $700 million in sales. We listed on the New York Stock Exchange in 1992. And we sold our products into New Zealand and Australia and actually in about 100 countries around the world. What happened there is in the mid-90s, the prices in the U.S. began coming down, and it became clear that we were in a long siege of just lower costs, lower prices. Our margins were down to under 1% profit on sales. So it just looked like a long battle ahead, and with a lot of headcount reduction every year, which I really didn't look forward to. And I saw an opportunity to redefine the company and move into assistive technology, and I'm defining that field as products for people with sensory and learning disabilities, particularly products that apply computer-based technology. So I identified some companies. In fact, we bought a company called Dynavox, which is the leader in the world in synthetic speech devices, or alternative and augmentative communication devices, AAC devices, where laptop computers where you have a touch screen and a vocabulary of words and icons, which allow people who've lost the ability to speak to form sentences and converse using this, what's really a portable computer. And we had very good experience with that company, and so I was planning to make other acquisitions in the field, and then Sunrise Medical basically ran out of money, and the banks put pressure on us to reduce our loan, and it was clear we weren't going to be making any acquisitions. And at this point, I was so excited about the opportunity of pulling companies together, particularly in the blind and low vision area, that I decided to leave Sunrise Medical. So I resigned in last October 5th. And then on October 6th, flew to Orlando to the Assistive Technology Industries Association trade show, and spent 3 days really talking to business owners to see whether or not it would be possible to pull together a group of companies and do the same thing in the blind low vision field. And I found a receptive audience, but particularly talking to Ted Henner of Henterjoyce and Dean Blazy of Blazy Engineering and then Jim Fruchterman of Arkenstone, I realized that that could be the nucleus of a new company. So I then put together a business plan in November, December, went out to about a dozen venture capital firms, and found that I had offers from four of them, and had a letter of intent by the end of January to raise the necessary funds. And then after a couple of months of due diligence and putting the legal documentation together, we launched the company on April 11th. So that was sort of the genesis. We folded in Arkenstone on June 9th. So the three companies came together really within a couple of months at that point.
I've had the privilege of talking to a lot of assistive technology people over the last year or so on this and other programs, and it seems to me that there are a number of things that attract people to this industry. Some people are interested in the research, the engineering challenges. Others, I guess, are motivated by a sense of public goodwill. And I just wonder, what attracts you in particular to assistive technology, given that you have come from a corporate management background, admittedly moving gradually into the disability sector, but what's the attraction in this industry?
Well, I mean, my wife's best friend and close family friends was in a wheelchair, so I was very aware of the whole disability products area from that angle. But really, it's an opportunity to use what I've learned how to do in an area where there just aren't many professional managers. There hasn't been access to public capital markets, so it's actually fortuitous to find that you're in an area where a little bit of intelligence goes a long way in so to speak, in the things that I know how to do. But I'm not a technology person, and so I basically immerse myself in the industry by surrounding myself and staffing the company with people who know the technology and know the specific problems of, in this case, people with blindness or low vision. Well, I think what's most distinctive about Freedom Scientific also is true about Sunrise Medical, that we have bridged the field of technology with the special needs of a disability group, namely blind and low vision. So our whole company is staffed by people who understand the needs of the end user, but they also understand the capabilities of today's technology, and they're at the leading edge of technology. So you have to bridge those two worlds. And if you staff the entire company with people who have that understanding, you end up with best-in-world products, which is, of course, our objective.
Venture capitalists obviously want some sort of return on their investment, and we're told repeatedly that this market is very small, a niche market in which it's hard to make a profit. How were you able to attract the kind of venture capital that you have?
The markets are small, and of the 12 venture capitalists I talked to, 8 of them decided to pass on the opportunity, and the reason basically was they felt like this is a small niche market, but it's just never going to be, an Amazon.com or Microsoft or a product or market that can really earn a good return. The ones that decided to invest have had some history in disability products, and they saw that the reason why it's a small market is because nobody's done what we're doing. Sunrise Medical and wheelchairs was a small market until Sunrise, and there was one other company that became our arch rival, Invacare, and the two companies became $700 million plus companies. So it became big business, but only because somebody had pulled together the product lines and started doing the professional marketing and the reinvestment in R&D and so forth. The margins of the market leaders are good. I mean, if you look at the companies we bought, our margins are respectable. When you go away from the market leaders to the number 2, 3, 4, 5 players, then it does become a very marginal business. So the industry can support, I think, in each market niche, it can support one good company in terms of financial results, and I think by combining a group of them, we can do even better. And there the question is gaining a scale of operations where it attracts capital markets, because they're not interested in a really nice, $3 million or $5 million business. I mean, to go public, you really need to be $50 to $100 million in sales.
There has been a theory expressed out there that if you don't grow the market sufficiently, you're going to have to satisfy those investors by increasing the price of the product you are selling. Do you have a view on that?
I just don't think that's going to happen. If you look at the history of products generally, I mean, all the products that we use every day have been declining in prices for several decades now, and it's why the whole world has realized that free market capitalism is the most efficient system. And this market has been sort of a byway of American industry and global industry because it hasn't had outside capital. But our focus is going to be on enlarging the market as a whole building the category, so to speak, because we already have very nice market positions within that. And to do that, you've got to make the products more affordable. You've got to have better distribution. You've got to reach out to people that are at the fringes that maybe didn't know these products existed or weren't properly trained. So it's a broad-based effort to expand the market, and certainly having lower prices over time, that's going to be part of the strategy. So that's nothing I would fear as a product user. I think that, in general, the products in this marketplace are higher cost than they should be. I mean, compare the cost of note takers to the cost of a laptop computer, for example. Mm. And that just reflects the small volume. So this is an effort to try and increase those volumes and gain some of the efficiencies of a larger scale operation.
Why Ted Henter and Dean Blasey in particular, given that there were so many potential companies that you could have picked to form this new entity?
Well, there's always something a little bit accidental and opportunistic about merging businesses that are privately owned. You have to find entrepreneurs who are at the right time in their lives. And I think it was just coincidental as much as anything that you've got Ted Henter, who's reaching an age and is approaching that 50-year mark where you start thinking about, is this what I want to do with my life for the next 10 or 15 years? The company had been successful, and it was getting larger and larger, and he felt that he really didn't want to be responsible for managing a business. He likes the product issues, but not the administrative issues. And coincidentally, Dean Blasey, in his early 50s, had reached a similar kind of conclusion, that he was getting sort of bogged down in management details and people management issues and administrative problems and computer systems, and what he really was interested in is product development. And they're both engineers, and as is Jim Fruchterman at Arkenstone. He had slightly different motivations. But in the case of Dean and Ted, it just happened that right now was a time when they both were open to the possibility of merging their businesses and forming a new company, and I came along with the access to the outside capital, with the history as a professional manager in the field of disability products since 1977. And so it was just a fortuitous confluence of three people with three separate interests all coming together.
Dean Blasey and Ted Henter are now pretty wealthy guys. Are you concerned that they might just run off and hang out on a beach somewhere and lose a whole lot of institutional knowledge for the company?
That's a real concern, yes. And so part of my job is to keep them involved. Which means that when you're managing entrepreneurial businesses like this, you manage them with kid gloves. And you have to be careful that you don't have some, you know, financial or administrative bureaucrat come in and start bugging them about details that make their life miserable. So that's part of my job, to shield them from that and to let them do what they like to do and know how to do best. And so so far it's succeeding. But that you're right, that's a critical issue for us to be successful, and I'll be disappointed if either one of them decides to retire. You know, we have non-compete contracts, so they can't go into a competition with us, but they could, you know, you can't force somebody to work. They're only going to do that if they enjoy it. But so far they've enjoyed it, and they have a lot of loyalty to their own companies and their own products, and they're very enthused about putting the hardware and the software together under a common umbrella and really building this into a major global business. They also have a financial stake. They have stock in the new company. So if we go public in 2 or 3 years, which is our goal, they stand to make an additional return on that investment. So that's keeping them motivated as well.
Freedom Scientific is an interesting name, and I guess when I first heard it from Ted Henter, I thought it doesn't really readily trip off the tongue. I guess we've all gotten used to it now. How on earth did you come up with that name?
Well, you know, I've always liked Apple Computer as a name, and it's probably hard to remember how innovative that was back in the 70s, combining, you know, sort of a warm and friendly word like Apple, almost a whimsical word, with a high-tech word like computers. But that juxtaposition says we're going to take technology and make it available to every man and every woman, and that was the goal of Apple. And they also had a very nice logo, an apple with a bite out of it, multicolored apple. And again, that was very memorable and sort of whimsical. So I always thought that was a very effective identity. And there was all kinds of computer companies with various systems this and data that, and they all become very forgettable. But you never forget Apple Computer. So when I started Sunrise Medical, I used a similar strategy. Sunrise is a word that has a universally positive image. You know, nobody doesn't like a sunrise, just like it's hard not to like an apple. And medical is a more technical word. And of course, a rising sun is a, we had a logo that was had a very attractive icon, and it's a very visual image. I've always felt that logos that were real objects, like a Prudential Rock or a Merrill Lynch Bull or something, were more memorable than just a graphic squiggle of some kind. So it worked well with Sunrise Medical. So when I was starting this company, I was trying to think, what is a word that's a universally positive connotation and that has special meaning to people with disabilities? And to me, it's freedom. Because when you've got a disability, somehow you've had some element of your independence or freedom taken away, and so your life is a challenge of regaining that freedom, so that it becomes a non-issue in your life, that the disability becomes a non-issue, or as close to that as possible. It's never possible completely, but so I like the word freedom, and then I was going to combine it with a word like technology, and that wasn't available. I wanted to have a domain name and a trademark, and the word scientific has a similar feel to it, but is a little more unusual. So I just came up with the idea of combining freedom with scientific.
Some in the blind community, since Freedom Scientific's existence was announced, have drawn analogies between your company and Microsoft, suggestions that you will, because of the huge amount of investment you now have behind you, squeeze some of the smaller players out of this market and therefore lead to all kinds of monopolistic practices, problems, less choice for blind people. How do you respond to that view?
Well, I just don't think it's going to happen. We have multiple competitors in each product area, so we have very tough competition, and it's not always clear that a company, as it gets bigger, has advantages against a small, nimble, entrepreneurial company that can move fast. So I think it's still going to be a healthy fight, and competition always emerges, so I wouldn't worry about that from a consumer standpoint. We're still we're trying to enlarge the market. We're trying to have the best products in the world. And I think you're going to see an acceleration in new product introductions and more aggressive marketing and more aggressive pricing. And I think that this is going to work for the benefit of people who are blind or have low vision. And I think that the proof of that is just going to have to be with our performance. So it may not convince anybody for me to say that, but the real question is going to be how does that show up in the products that we introduce and in our practices. And I think it will show up over time, and I think, you know, if you step back, and there's a lot of resentment of Microsoft, but the fact is they have led the revolution in the PC and putting personal computers on everybody's desk at home and at work in America, practically, or just a huge percentage of people's homes and workplaces. So on balance, having someone whose focus is on enlarging the market as a whole and making technology products easier to use has been a very positive influence in that industry, and I think you'll see the same thing in this industry.
I suppose you have a bit of a tightrope to walk in the sense that you're competing with some other product developers on the one hand and needing to interact with them on another. For example, it will be important to ensure that OpenBook and the Blazy note takers are interacting with other screen readers sufficiently. Is it too early to assess the nature of your relationships with other players in this industry?
Well, we're not trying to change anything very dramatically there. I mean, we're looking at it, but for example, JAWS needs to work with all of the Braille displays, and there's 6 Braille display makers in Europe in addition to Blazy's Power Braille line in the United States. So it would hurt JAWS to say we're not going to be compatible with the 6 European manufacturers, and we have good relationships with them. So I think you have to really segment each product category. And it's a little bit like these pharmaceutical companies or the big entertainment conglomerates. You end up competing in some markets and being partners in other markets and trying to be compatible in other ways. So I think that that's sort of natural today in business, and we'll have to work that through. But I don't see any particular need for changes in that area. And you know, one thing I would like to say that sort of relates to all of these questions or all these fears that people might have. We put in our original press release the point that out of 71 associates, which is our term for employees, Hunter Joyce had 31 who were blind the day we acquired them or pulled them together in this group. And Blasey also has their most important positions in the development and product marketing area, or should I say a number of their most important positions, filled by people who are blind. So this company has a built-in constituency of our knowledge workers. Over half are blind. About three-quarters of our knowledge workers are blind, and by that I mean the people that really are involved in technical issues. So they're going to keep us honest and make sure that whatever we're doing is in the interest of the blindness community, because they want products that are better for them, and they're using these products every day. So that's our first constituency before we even talk to any outsiders. And of course, we're also spending a lot of time talking to outsiders. In fact, since April 11th, I've talked to our biggest customers in the U.S. and in Europe. I've been on the road basically, and have been talking to their customers, the commissions, the agencies, the schools for the blind, in Europe and the United States. I haven't made it to the Pacific Rim yet, but I will in the not too distant future. So, we're still paying a lot of attention to our customers. They're the ones that are creating the roadmap that we should follow. And my questions are always very similar. They're open-ended questions like, tell me about your experiences with our company. What are some of the problems you've had? What are the frustrations? How are we servicing you? How's our quality? What products would you like to see that you don't now have? Give me your wish list. Just open-ended questions like that, and I come back with pages of notes, and then that determines our marching orders from this point forward. And we've got work to do. There are areas where we could greatly improve our service, our technical support, our product reliability, and our ease of use for the end users. Those are some very important issues for us.
Well, that brings us nicely onto the next. Oh, sorry, go on. Just give us one example.
Okay, I'll give you one example. For example, the Blasey Note Taker line has used a number of different cables for connecting to the charger, and printer cables and so forth. And a lot of them are non-standard. So we're now going to standard cables. So if you happen to lose a cable, you can replace it at a Radio Shack or CompUSA or your local electronics retailer. And that's just a little thing, but I think that's something that with a little bit of engineering effort can easily be done. So we're going to make sure that all of our new models use standard connectors. And that came from me talking to 20 different customers and having that come up maybe 6 or 8 times.
Well, that brings us nicely onto product development questions. You have an interesting synergy there, I would expect, that could potentially be taken advantage of between the note-taking line, the screen reading line, and OCR. And potentially, if you could get the engineering issues sorted out, come up with a pretty super-duper portable laptop-type device. Is anything like that in the works?
Absolutely. I think this is a natural evolution. And, I mean, we want to move note-takers towards, laptop PC-type functions, but it still needs to have instant-on, which is very important, and it needs to have a 20 to 30-hour battery life so you can get through an entire day, as opposed to your, laptop, which, if you're on a long plane trip, runs out before the plane lands. So I think there's some things we have to do in note takers that are going to keep it very distinct from the laptop market. But I think things like scanning capability, screen reading capability. I mean, you'd like your note taker to be able to allow you to surf the net while you're traveling, and of course email connections and Word documents. All of those things that you'd like to be able to use. With standard interfaces with your PC so that you can exchange information on your contact list or your scheduling. Those are things that people are now expecting in personal digital assistants. So we have got a major internal effort going to totally redo our Blasey Note Taker line and upgrade the technology over the next 12 months, and we'll see a new note taker introduced in September that accomplishes a lot of that, and then another totally new line next summer that goes even farther. That's even a bigger leap forward. So we've got two new generations of products that we'll be introducing in the next 12 months now.
Are you somewhat concerned as a businessman that prior to your acquisition of these companies that it seems that Blasey allowed itself to be jumped by Pulse Data International with its Braille Notes product and that what you're describing appears to be already out there from another company?
Well, I think that that shows that competition is alive and well. And I think that that was a good wake-up call for Blazy. Now, they had, you know, a program in the works that was addressing a lot of those same issues. And the new product in September will be a nice match and have some features that they don't have. So, you know, they just started shipping in June, so we'll be about 3 months late. But I think the distractions of the selling the company and merging with Energize, all this that we've gone through really since last September, all of those things have, caused, a delay, and I think, that's something that we're gonna correct very quickly. So it's absolutely our top priority. And I think it shows that we're going to end up being a positive influence by bringing sort of the urgency of professional management and also of outside capital now, which has invested a lot in this venture. That's creating a lot more urgency than when it was just a privately owned, a family-owned business.
The new note-taker that you mentioned that's coming out in September, that is a completely new piece of hardware, is it not? Just a software update to the note-takers that people already
have? Yes, that's correct.
What will it be called?
You know, we haven't decided, but I think we're going to build on the same existing names, basically the Blazy, you know, Braille Light and so forth. So we're talking about that right now. We got a lot of brands between Freedom Scientific and Blazy and the Braille Light. So I'm very concerned about too much proliferation of brands. But certainly there's a lot of brand equity, a lot of name recognition in the word Blazy, and also in Braille Light and Braille and Speak. So it'll be some combination of those words.
Now, it sounds to me, though, that what you're describing is some sort of transitional note-taking device, that this one that's coming out in September will do some of the things that people have asked for, but people will need to wait another year until they get most of the things that they've asked for. So what would be the incentive for people to buy this new product that's coming out in September?
Well, I think the new product is a giant leap ahead of where we are today, and I think it addresses the needs that people are really asking for. The one next year are things that a lot of people haven't thought of. You know, that's much more of a leapfrog into a whole new generation, a move much closer to a PC.
And because this product is hardware, is there going to be any possibility of some sort of upgrade path for those who own existing Blazy note takers who need this functionality?
Well, we're talking about that right now. It is a totally new product, but we're talking about how can we encourage people. And in fact, we're going to, you know, we'll have some kind of a marketing program we're going to announce very quickly that for anybody who buys a note taker right now, we're going to make it very easy to switch products or upgrade in September.
So how much of this functionality will we see? I guess if it's a response in some ways to the Braille Note, you'll be looking at Word, Microsoft Word compatibility. Perhaps is email going to be in this particular note taker web server?
I think we're going to have everything that they have plus some other things that they don't. Plus a better package, a smaller, the package that we're working on is about half the size of the Braille Note in terms of volume.
Will it serve the web?
And I think size is very important in this market.
Yep. And web surfing, is that included?
I think in terms of, I guess I'd rather not talk about specific features. Right now you can't really web surf with the Braille Note, and there isn't a screen reader, so it sounds good, but in terms of what you're really getting, it's not very different, you know, not so different from what you're getting now. And I think really that's what people want, is a screen reader built in. And I think that's, I view that as more of a PC, application. But we've got the best screen reader in the world, so I don't think there's anybody better at accomplishing that than us.
Okay, one more question on this. The speech in the unit that's coming out in September, is there going to be a change to the traditional Blazy speech?
I guess I'd rather not comment on that. We're again, it's something we've got a development plan, and I don't want to tip our hand too much, but we will be marketing, we will be describing the new product and introducing it very quickly so people know what's coming. And much like the Braille Note, you know, it was introduced in March but wasn't shipping till, you know, the end of June. So I think that we'll try to flag what's going to be in the product so people can see it before they make any decision about purchasing one product or the other right now when our new one is so imminent. I think it would be good for people to know what's coming.
Understood. Well, when you're ready to talk some more about it, we'd love to talk to the appropriate person to flesh that out some more.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you about D-Day, which took place on the 17th of July, and this is where there was, I think, customers really started to notice that Freedom Scientific had arrived. Can you explain a bit about what happened on July 17th and how that has gone 2 weeks down the track?
What we did was we basically moved Arkestone from California to St. Petersburg and moved Blasey. We shut down Maryland and moved Blasey from Forest Hill, Maryland, splitting it between St. Petersburg in the case of sales and marketing and order entry and customer interaction. And then the other operational side went to Stuart, Florida, where Blasey's R&D has been. So we now have got Blasey R&D, product management, technical support, manufacturing and shipping, all that is under one roof now in Stuart, Florida, which is about 175 miles on the east coast across the state from St. Petersburg on the west coast where Henry Joyce is and where the group headquarters are. So now orders, when you call in now on the 800 number, and you can place all orders through this one number, the orders are then taken, whether you want Arkenstone, Henry Joyce, or Blasey products. And then if it's software, it's shipped out of St. Petersburg. If it's hardware, the order is transferred electronically to Stuart, and it's shipped from there. So it's going, and the answer is it's going great. It's everybody's been terrific, worked very hard to make this work seamlessly for our customers. And we're shipping products from both places. We're answering the phone. We have shifted technical support from California to St. Petersburg. We're answering the phone much faster now than it had been at Arkenstone. As it happens, a lot of the people in technical support were open book users because, of course, most of them are blind. And so there already was some good product knowledge there. But we've also been training everybody across all three product lines. And I think there's still more work to be done in getting everybody totally familiar with all the products. But I think the Henry Joyce business systems were working well and their management processes and their customer interface was good, so I think we're basically building on that capability with additional product lines, and it's going well.
So that's the advantage for Arkenstone users, you think, in the new arrangement, that while they are no longer accessing toll-free technical support, it is more timely and comprehensive.
Exactly. I mean, they were a nonprofit corporation, so they were able to do things without worrying about the bottom line, and that was one of the things that they did. However, the way they solved the economic squeeze of having toll-free numbers is they had very few people giving technical support. So it was hard to get through, and you'd have to queue up for a long time. Our average technical support call is answered now in less than a minute. And that's down from about 4 minutes in January. And we now track that data. We have, it's all on computer. We track it daily, weekly. How long has the longest person been waiting? How long is the average wait? What's the abandoned call rate, which is about 4% right now. So we're really trying to pay attention to improve customer service, and technical support is one of the big areas.
One of the issues that has come up from time to time is that as the screen reading industry becomes more adept at dealing with challenges, the screen reader of necessity becomes more complex to use. It has features that some people never use. Have you considered looking at some sort of a lighter version of JAWS, which would be cheaper and therefore making screen reading functionality of a basic sort available to more people?
Yes, we have, and that's one of the things I learned is there's a lot of requests for that, and in fact even a lot of demand for it. So yeah, and that's the kind of thing that we think offers an exciting product opportunity.
So
JAWS is a very complicated program because it's so multifaceted and there's a lot to learn there, and I think a lot of people really want to do much simpler things. What a lot of us do with our PCs at home, that they want to be able to surf the internet, exchange email, and write an occasional Word document, and those are things you could do with a much simpler version of JAWS.
Alternatively, I suppose another option is to flesh out OpenBook a bit more. I mean, I noticed that in version 5 that's coming out, you already have email capabilities. And OpenBook can, of course, save to different types of file formats. So I suppose by just adding a little more functionality, you have, and perhaps web surfing, for instance, you have an environment that shields the user from Windows, but gives them the basic functionality of completing certain tasks.
Yes, and that's one of the appeals of getting these development programs under the same roof. And, of course, this is a transition where the next update is being done jointly with what's now called Benetech, Jim Frechterman and his engineering team. But then, but we're weaning ourselves away, and within 6 months or so, we'll be totally independent. But that'll allow the people in development to use more of a building block approach and decide which, you know, programming modules should go with which product, and certainly the scanning represents a distinctive capability and a special need separately from screen reading, but there's a lot of common elements in those programs, and so that's something we're now able to do, and I think you'll see the product line as it goes forward blend together in a number of different ways, or the three product lines.
Mm.
So, I'm certainly having a note taker that has a screen reader built in, as I said, is an obvious one, and we've got that capability in-house so that we don't need to do any licensing or any very original development for that.
So is a lighter version of JAWS actively under development, or is it currently under consideration?
No, it's actively under development. I think that's something we definitely need.
And is there a time frame in mind for its release?
I'd rather not talk about that. It's always a little bit speculative when you talk about development work, but certainly that's in our pipeline. Everything we've talked about so far is in our pipeline, and by that I don't mean a pipeline that's years long. I mean we're talking months. You know, I'm looking over the next, you know, 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 months, and focusing a lot on what we can accomplish in that kind of time frame.
One of the things that really interests me about this industry, it's a cultural thing, I think, is that you can buy products directly from the people that manufacture them, or you can buy them from a dealer. And I wonder whether, you know, that seems to me slightly non-standard in its behavior, and that if I were a dealer, I might wonder whether the manufacturer of the software was trying to cut me out a little. Do you have a view on whether that's likely to continue?
I don't think it is a long-term stable situation. I think there is, it is unusual to be selling direct and also through dealers. And I think there's a longer-term gravitation towards the dealers. I think the dealers seem to be maturing each year as the industry grows. I think people want a local level of service, support, in some many cases installing software, delivering and setting it up so that, you know, all you have to do is turn the on button on and you're in business. There's a need for training. There's a need for script writing or consulting to make employers' application programs work with JAWS, for example. So all of this requires a local presence in the marketplace. I think as the industry develops, we're going to see stronger dealers, and more local services as being part of the whole product and service mix that we offer end users. I think that's what people want, and that's what this industry has to figure out how to provide.
Now, there was a kind of a rumor going around that eventually Freedom Scientific would require exclusivity from its dealers. Can you confirm or deny that?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know how a rumor gets started like that. No, we're not contemplating that. I think that the dealer needs to have a full range of products. And we don't cover the whole marketplace, and we have three companies, but when you look at, you know, there's probably 50 companies servicing this field in one way or another, just the vision-related products. So all you have to do is open up one of the catalogs, and you see, you know, 60, 80 pages of products. So there's going to be lots of other products sold side-by-side with ours by the dealers. I think that's what customers want. They want choice. They want dealers to be able to give them an independent opinion of what the right product is for their particular needs. And so that objectivity is important in terms of the local dealer's credibility.
When it was mentioned that I'd be speaking with you, the number one question that came through to my email box on a large number of occasions was, the question of the matter of Blasey Engineering's representation at ACB conventions, or lack thereof, that for the last number of years people have been unable to receive Braille Light updates when they attended ACB conventions. Is this a policy that is under review, or that has been actively changed, or what is your view on it?
Oh, it's clearly changing. I mean, we'll support the ACB, we support the NFB, and Blasey has a long history with the NFB, and we are going to honor that. We think it's a terrific organization, but we also think the ACB serves its members very well and is an excellent organization, too. And I visited both conventions, and they both represent important groups of customers and end users, and so we're going to apply the same, we're going to be providing the same kind of service at the convention for the ACB, so their members have an opportunity to see our products and get upgrades as those who attend the NFB convention.
Okay, so we have your categorical assurance that Freedom Scientific in all its guises, including Braille Light, Blasey Note Takers, will be there at the 2001 convention in Iowa.
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you finally about going public. This seems like a very interesting cultural shift in the blindness industry. What do you think it means for customers, if anything, the prospect of Freedom Scientific going public?
It means that not only our company, but it means that the industry has come of age, I think. Because as you look across the global economy, the leaders in most markets are now publicly held companies, and they are accessing capital markets, which means that you can grow faster, you can invest more in technology and facilities, you can be a world-class company. And I think that's what this industry needs. It also means that you've got the disciplines of being an investor-owned company as opposed to a family-owned company. So that puts a lot of pressure. There's a lot more pressure on me meeting the needs and the expectations of our board of directors, which consists basically of our venture capitalists at this point, plus, you know, the one or two outsiders. But it's for me to meet their needs, we've got to perform at a much accelerated pace from what, you know, has occurred in the past. And it's a lot different than a family-owned business where the owner just has to look in the mirror every day to decide whether he's, you know, doing the job he wants to do. So I think you're going to see it's a very positive influence. And I think going public means that anybody in the world who wants to can buy stock. We'll be on the stock exchange, and you'll then be able to see our financial numbers, which are at least of passing interest to people frequently, and see the kind of growth that we're achieving. And that's, I think that just makes the whole game more interesting to people in this industry, if you can invest dollars in a company whose products you like to use. And we hope that we would attract investors from within the industry once that happens. But it's 2 or 3 years down the road. I don't mean to say that it's right around the corner, because I think we've got to get our act together, get the businesses integrated, start performing well in all the various functional areas where I think we've in some cases fallen short. So we've got a lot of internal work to do to get this business running the way I'd like to see it, and the way I think people expect to see it in other areas. I mean, I think when you buy a product nowadays, whether it's a VCR or a television or a car or something, you expect it to be easy to use. You don't expect to have to get it repaired. Typically you don't even bother reading the owner's manual because it's so intuitive. And you just expect total reliability for the life of the product. We've got to attain those kinds of standards. And that's, for the kind of quantities we make, that's a lot tougher. And given the economics, the small economics of this, tiny little industry, that's a lot tougher to accomplish. But I think we will get there. I think we've got the best chance of getting there of anybody in our industry and raising our performance standards in all areas of our business.
Are there any other companies in the blindness area that you are actively in negotiation with?
I don't think there's anything particularly imminent right now, but I have lots of discussions going with lots of companies, and when I went to that ATIA show and I went to Closing the Gap and CSUN, I mean, there's about 100 companies at those shows, and, you know, I went to every booth, you know, and just sort of got to know the products a little bit and asked a few questions about the company. And I've had many, many conversations with many, many companies in all aspects of the industry. So, and you'll probably continue to hear rumors. And I would guess, you know, 90% of them are false. And really, they're probably all false because as soon as there's something to announce, we announce it. You know, once there's, if we owned a company, we would announce it, we always would announce it the day we close the deal. And until you close the deal, you really don't have anything to announce because you never know for sure you're going to close it. So I think right now, I mean, there's nothing to announce, and right now we're trying to manage what we've got. But certainly in terms of our strategic plan, we've identified a number of companies that would be great strategic fits with what we've got going here. But there's also a number of other companies that are large and are going to continue to be very formidable competitors. So I don't think anybody needs to worry about that. And you've got companies like IBM and Microsoft that are involved in the marketplace and other companies that are have been around a long time, whether it's Tiemens or Telesensory, for example, that Tiemens has that are large companies. Learned and Housebee is a major corporation we're reading about in the papers all the time. There was just an article about them in the current Forbes magazine. So you've got a number of major players in this industry besides us. I'm actually a little surprised that we've attracted quite so much attention, because I just view this as a very embryonic venture at this point. But I hope to, you know, we're going to be putting ourselves on the map even more, I think, with what comes along in the future as we accomplish our objectives.
Perhaps the kind of attention you've attracted is really a backhanded compliment at the market leading position that many of your products have.
I think that's true. I think these are well-known companies. They've been around. Each of them developed in the mid to late 80s, so we're really talking about over a decade of involvement by these three companies and these three entrepreneurs. So I think they were very well liked and respected and appreciated as entrepreneurs who really grew up inside the industry. I mean, this was not an IBM or Microsoft suddenly deciding that they better pay attention to disability and access issues. These were people that personally had some know-how and had a need to apply it. In the case of Ted Henner, wanted to be able to use a computer and finding that the screen readers that were out there just weren't good enough. Or Dean Blasey, knowing Tim Cramner, who was blind and involved in the state of Kentucky, involved in rehabilitation services for the blind and realizing that he could, with his knowledge of engineering, electronics, and computer programming, could come up with a note taker that nobody else had done before. That kind of special insight, and Jim Fruchterman, who's just a crack engineer on optical scanning, involved his company. His prior company provides all the optical scanning machinery that the U.S. Postal Service uses to sort mail. So you've got an engineer here that really understands scanning, but gets interested in the blindness field and decides to apply that know-how to the particular challenges of reading software and reading machines. So those are all fortuitous developments, and as a result, within this industry, these three gentlemen are really leaders and innovators, and have created whole product categories that are now being imitated or competed with on a number of other fronts. So I think we've got a great corporate history here, corporate heritage, and my goal is to keep that going.
I want to thank you very much for giving us this time, and I hope that we'll keep in touch on Main Menu as the many exciting product developments that you've hinted at today actually take shape, and I really appreciate the time you've given us.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.